ladies. Welcome to the Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls podcast. I am your host, Luz Selenia, founder and owner of The Radiant Sessions, certified spiritual life coach and professional life coach, energy healer, meditation guide, and your priestess of sensuality.
Well, if you have been joining us for this Kinky Church Girl month, since it is Kinktober, you have made it to part three and our final installment of this series. And as promised, I was able to re-record. So we have D-Ray with us, and I will not hold you any further. We're going to jump in to that interview, and once that's done, I will come back with closing remarks. Well, hello, everyone. Delayed, but not denied. We were supposed to have D-Ray with us last week, but, you know, technology be doing its thing. And honestly, guess what? I think everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. You know, I was stressed for a second, but, you know, it all works out. And she is here with us today. D-Ray, also known as Minxy, is a country girl living in the city world. Hailing from the magical land of Louisiana, the DMV has been her home for about 15 years. She's a digital storyteller, content creator, event organizer, Black culture devotee, and the founder of Sunny D Productions, which produces live media, educational networking events, and intimate parties, as well as a podcast, Sunny D, where she talks about her favorite things, tea, Star Trek, and relationships. D is a Black polyamorous pansexual polymath. Try to say that about four times back to back. Welcome her. And yes, thanks for coming again.
Yes.
I appreciate you so much. You are amazing, as you already know, but it's worth being said again. Thanks for coming on Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me. I do tend to come more than once, so this is on brand.
As we all should. As we all should. That's why we're here. We're trying to help the people come more than once.
Okay? Hello, yes. Help
the church girls. Let's get right into it. What is your upbringing? What makes you a church girl?
What makes me a church girl? All right. So my both my parents are deeply entrenched in the church. My mom, her family are Southern Missionary Baptists. My father's mother is a CME, Christian Methodist Episcopal preacher. And growing up, we were, when I was really little, we were Kojic, Church of God in Christ, which I like to say are the Black Pentecostals. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
My mama had to like hide the fact that whenever we were like babies, she got us our ears pierced. You're not supposed to have like your ears pierced with jewelry and stuff like that. At least back then. I think that they're different now. Yeah. So that was me growing up. I was in church all the time. Like I was on the drill team because my dad led the drill team. I was in the youth choir. I was in the regular choir. I was the youth usher. I was in church for Sunday school, church, regular church, second service, prayer meetings, Bible study, choir rehearsal, usher board meetings. It's like every other day of the week, if not every day of the week, there was something. And then in the summertime, we had vacation Bible school. We had the annual Baptist conventions. All types of different church conventions. And then since my grandmother was a CME preacher, she also took us over the summer. And every time she took us over the summer, it was always during church camp or vacation Bible school. Somehow that was the week that she got. Somehow. So yeah, I was entrenched in the church growing up. And to nobody's surprise, I joined a Christian sorority whenever I was in college. Which actually is to some people's surprise, because now people that know me now and they find out, they be like,
what kind of sorority is that?
Every time they surprise. like, y'all know a lot about the word.
If they actually knew us, though.
if they only knew.
They really do. A shout out to the Dove Sisters and Eagle Brothers of Alpha and Omega Incorporated. But you have a vast experience in the church and very diverse.
Yes.
Which is beautiful because a lot of people don't understand how diverse the Black experience is or the church experience is. Like, we are not a monolith.
Yep.
There are a lot of similarities and things that we talk to each other. We're like, oh yeah, that us too. But
yeah.
Even for myself, like growing up in Black church, like with my mom, we went to a Baptist church, non-denominational churches. But with my grandparents, who were my pastors, Spanish Pentecostal. And the Spanish Pentecostal is, I liken it to more to like what people would think of as holiness.
Oh
yeah, like we was that.
Yeah.
So the fact that I dyed my hair, cut it, have a nose ring, and wear the clothes that I wear, let alone wear lingerie in public. My grandfather, you know, there's turning in graves. He's definitely like, what happened to my molonga, which is what he would call me. What happened? I said she could wear pants at 16, and look what
I have unleashed. I have unleashed it.
And it's funny because I encounter a lot of older people in church who still subscribe to respectability and how we dress, and they'll come talk to me like, oh, you don't know any better. I was like, you have no idea what I know. You have no idea that, you know, shorts were for underdresses. Like, you can't even wear shorts in the house, or V-neck, sleeveless, anything like that. Whoop, you might have grown up more liberal than I did.
Hello.
I was like, but what they also don't understand is that the way that we live our lives now isn't for people like us, isn't by happenstance. It's not an accident. Like, we're living this way intentionally.
Yes.
And we have educated ourselves and continue to educate ourselves. So for you, like, what was the beginning of that turning point for you growing up with such a diverse church background, knowing how we were supposed to present ourselves, supposed to live, or at least, you know, act like we were living it?
Mm-hmm.
What was the beginning of the end?
So this is a very interesting question, because I think that there were a lot of things growing up that contributed to the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. Like, my mother is a very she is very religious and she is very spiritual, but she's also very accepting. Like, she was the aunt that everybody who was gay that came out came to her. She was the aunt who everybody wanted to spend the night over there, who they would ask for advice and all of this. Whenever I lost my virginity, I came to her first. I was in high school. I came to her, we talked about it. And she would give us like condoms and stuff. But she also, you know, give us the word and be right. Like, you shouldn't be doing this because of this, mm-hmm. and this. But at the same time, she was a person that was like, but if you don't talk to somebody about it, then you're just gonna lie about it, or you just, or something wrong is gonna happen, or you won't be safe. Because she still is about that. She's, as long as you're being safe and you're protecting your health, you grown now, so I can't do anything about it, but I just want to make sure you're safe. So she is that person where she's like, I want to make sure that you know that you can always come to me and that safety is paramount. So even if she didn't agree with stuff, she was always there. So I think I learned that openness from her. And she also was somebody who questioned mm-hmm. things. Like, she didn't just believe, well, the pastor said this, so the end.
Mm-hmm.
She very much encouraged us to question things. I mean, she's a teacher.
Yeah.
So she's like, if you gonna believe, then you can research. Ain't nothing wrong with being like, well, what does my interpretation say about this? Because she will tell anybody, say, well, most of these people are stupid.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, you gotta question it, because they ain't nothing but humans themselves, and they might be telling you something wrong. So I'm not gonna tell you not to question, because what if this is the one where they just warp the word? So it's like, okay, so that I think contributed to it, because I think the beginning of the end was me going to Howard. And yes, I joined this Christian organization. And because I was so entrenched in the church, and I also was in like two or three religious organizations on Howard's campus, I took divinity classes. And it's really funny because almost all the Black folks I know who went to divinity school are like right now either atheist, agnostic, or have supplemented their spirit, their like religion with other things because of what they learned in divinity school. I was always the person who I never felt guilty for the shit that I was doing. I felt guilty because I didn't feel guilty.
Yeah.
Which is a whole nother thing. So I felt guilty because, you know, like they telling me I should feel bad. I'm confessing these sins, even though I don't feel bad about them. And everybody is looking at me like, damn, wow, you doing all of this? Or girl, can you just lie about it? Because you're doing too much. You're looking all clean and Christian. You over here telling your story. And yes, people are relating to you, but you not, it doesn't look like you are relevant because you
like, hey, your mask, you forgot to put it on. Could you put this on?
Could you put it back on? Could you put it back on? You can say that's what happened in the past. You can't say, well, you know, last weekend this dude I know, he went to the movies and then I went back to his apartment. You can't say that you did that last week. You can say you did it last year and now you have been delivered.
You're delivered, yes.
You're delivered from one night stands, but you can't say that you just had one last week, girl. So I just never felt guilty about it. And then whenever I started taking divinity classes and I was able to have access to certain tools, like I distinctly remember one where they took the original text and they had an original language, whichever, you know, Old Testament, whatever language it was in, depending on which book was written, because, you know, different languages. So they had the original text and then they had it like in a translation that somebody recently did. And then they had it in like, you can pick the other translations, like you could pick King James or NIV or whatever. But in the middle, they had, this is a scholar who has no religious ties, who just translated this. And there were certain sections that were highlighted where you can click on it and you can see like, this is the cultural context of this phrase, or this is the cultural context of this thing that's there or whatever. And so looking at that, I learned so much that it was like, a lot of things that I learned were taken out of context and they weren't put into like the cultural context that it was back then and how that context has changed now, because culturally we are way, way different. Culturally, technologically, like there's so many things that are different now, and you need to know the context of something in order to get the full grasp of what it means. So I think that was definitely the turning point. Specifically made me taking Pauline Thought, because it was a 2-semester course that was just about Paul's writings. And I was like, this is insane, because
there is so many, write a lot of them.
you listen, so many, and then there were just so many things where I was like, damn, that's what that really means. And I had no clue. It just changed my whole perspective on like the Bible, what God is directing us to do, what the idiosyncrasies and I don't want to say traps, but like just the restraints that man puts on stuff because of, like I said, cultural aspects, political things at the time, agendas that folks have, and just wrong translations or the fact that, you know, some words don't have straight translations, like word-for-word translations. You know, as a person who live in Louisiana and has Creole and French in my background, there was definitely words growing up that I didn't know were French until I started taking French in middle school, high school. I was like, damn, that's a French word. But like, there are words and phrases that don't translate directly to English, or they do, but they make no sense in English. And I don't know why, but I never thought that that could have that. That's like true of anything. So there, I truly believe there are definitely things in the Bible where it's like you translate it to the best that you can, but it doesn't translate right. It's just not correct unless you have the context. So yes, for me, that was the beginning of the end. The beginning of the beginning.
I totally get that. As someone who spoke Spanish as my first language, that was one of the things that stuck out to me early on, because I would see and hear people try to translate, and I'm like you said, like, you can't translate word for word. You got to try the best that you can.
Yeah.
To translate what the meaning and the spirit of what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And even then, mm-hmm. oftentimes they're just not words in English that is going to fully encompass what they were trying to say.
Yeah. And
when you were talking, the first thing that I remember that kind of blew my mind about learning the cultural significance of Ruth and Boaz's story.
Mm, yes.
Because of how often in church they're telling us, wait on your Boaz. People wrote mm-hmm. books and t-shirts and whole movements on waiting on your Boaz. And then you go learn that one, she didn't wait. Damn. And two, culturally, her going to uncover his feet was sucking his dick.
Yo, when I learned that, I was
so
like,
you want me to be Ruth? Okay.
All right. Gladly. Like, I can be Ruth all day.
Gladly. I could do that. But I know that's not what you mean. Because you're like, if you just read Uncovering His Feet in English, that means nothing.
Right. You're just like, oh, well, maybe she's being, you know, submissive.
Euphemism. And so when I remember reading that, and it was like, so if that doesn't mean that, and I'm not Jewish, I wouldn't know. What else is there?
Yeah.
What else is there in the Bible that we have decided is going to mean something in order to subjugate people? And it also, I think it also is something that boggles my mind for us as Black folk, because we know in some way, shape, or form or another, how the Bible was used erroneously
mm-hmm.
to tell us that we were slaves and we're supposed to obey our master. I'm like, so the cognitive dissonance is like mind boggling, because if we know that that's the case, why aren't we questioning more?
Yeah.
Why are we, you know, letting a select few go get this education, especially now that the internet there's no gatekeeper.
Yes, because I was going to say that. I was like, now it's so much easier. Like when I was growing up, especially me growing up in a rural area where the only internet that there was, even whenever I was in high school, that could reach my mama's house was dial up. And mm-hmm. we couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
but like before, it was a question of access, because who has the access? Who has the privilege to go to these? Because like a lot of the preachers back then too did not have that access.
Exactly.
So they're just going off of, you know, like what they feel called to do in their own understanding. So like I said, if somebody's like, oh yeah, Ruth laid at Boaz's feet, if they don't have access to get the cultural understanding, then they're going to flip it into the perspective of themselves, which is the feet are at the very bottom, mm-hmm. which means that she was being subservient, and that's what a good wife should do. You should lay at his feet and wait for him to make the move. That is, of course, like that. If you were just reading it and trying to interpret it off of the things that you know and the culture you were brought up at, then of course you're like, yes,
that makes sense.
That makes sense. And that's how you're going to interpret to everybody else, because you don't know better and you don't have the access and the means to know better. But now you do. Y'all, mm-hmm. now we do. So question, like there's no point in not questioning things. I think people think that questioning things, especially Black people, because we're taught, like when you are in a position of less power, such as children, and we are mm-hmm. God's children, you do not question your parents. Yep.
That is inherently disrespectful.
Period. So I think a lot of people still take that mindset as adults of like, well, God is God and I am his child, so I don't question the things.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's unfortunate.
It's so unfortunate. We're a lot of people are missing so much. And that's why we're here. That's why we're doing this.
Yep.
Because I know that there are people who still don't feel comfortable asking, having the conversations. And now in the privacy of your own home, you can listen. And hopefully more than anything will spark you to be like, let me go, because I got some questions. Let me go look this up.
Yeah.
You know, don't take my word for it. It is exciting. It's challenging. It can be scary, but it is so worthwhile because it has opened up a world to me to one, yes, now read the Bible as a mythological text, as opposed to completely literal.
Right.
To one, see its value and its importance, but not elevate it higher than the living word.
Right. And even if you're not reading it as a mythological text, for those of y'all that's like, I don't feel comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Think about this. You're reading it as a history book.
Yeah.
As a Black person who grew up in the South reading history books, who wrote the books?
Yeah.
Those in the positions of power, those who had the ability to read and write and to print them. And so what then gets printed? The story that they want to be told. So like there are definitely things in the Bible where it's like they can be corroborated. Like this is who was the king at the time. This is what they did back then at that point in time. Yes, yes. But you also have to take a critical eye, even if you're taking it as a historical text, to say like, okay, what parts of these are historical? What parts of these can be proven? Mm-hmm. And what parts of these can be like, we were taking it as, they're taking it as metaphors. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of parables and we know that they're metaphors. They mm-hmm. aren't actual things that happen. What makes you think that there aren't stories that aren't listed as parables that are?
That are.
What makes you think that there aren't things that were told from a different perspective? And that perspective is, again, warped by a person's like experience and privilege. Yep. So, yeah, like you read history books now, you can say that I know that's not how that actually happened. They have erased all the Black people from here. What makes mm-hmm. you think that the Bible didn't erase certain things
yeah.
or just didn't show them, not even erased it, just didn't show it because they didn't have anybody there at the time who was willing or able to share that piece of it. Yep. So even if you're not reading that as mythological text, y'all, you still have to like cite sources. This is the first thing you learn in college. I mean, some people don't go to college and that's fine, but this is one of the first things that you learn when you're doing research is look at several sources. And that's all I got to say about that.
Yep. I mean, I think a good example of that that just recently happened with Black history is the documentary on Rosa Parks.
Yes.
And how we learned about Rosa Parks in a very specific way. And now this documentary, people are like, they lied to us.
Yep.
And yep. So go, it's on PBS, go watch it and think about that. Think about the lesson of, again, the person who tells the story gets to frame it in the way that they choose.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, whether their intention was to be evil or not. What does that mean when certain people are the ones that get to tell the story versus the people who actually lived it,
yep.
people who are actually experiencing it? How, you know, that story of Ruth and Boaz, if Ruth was actually writing her own story, how would that story have been told differently
mm-hmm.
as a story of probably about survival, that she was willing to do whatever because what she did wasn't necessarily, you know, a good thing.
Right.
But she did what she had to do for her and her mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, I honor every woman that in this society does what she has to do. They did what Ruth did.
Yes.
And were strategic in making sure that they and their family were protected and taken care of.
You did what needed to be done.
And so we know and we bless your mother for being that person. I've met her and she is exactly what she says. I think of women like her as they act like bridges.
Mm-hmm.
They're open, they're there, they're sturdy. They, you know, they're providing something, and they're not closed off.
Yeah.
And they yeah. and she has played obviously a pivotal role in your life along with HU, the Mecca, and providing you now with the educational you know, support to what she was saying. Well, yeah. I had a question and do this thing. So what world opened up to you at that point?
So So around this time, there's a lot of things percolating around this time. So I was, again, you know, in this sorority, in this Christian sorority, A&Q, and I was dating a frat brother in it. We eventually broke up, though we kept having sex. I also was, no, that happened after. So yeah, I was dating him. We broke up. We broke up for many reasons. Oh my goodness. I'm not even going to go into that because it was a lot. But around the same time, so I was taking Pauline Thought. He had just broken up with me. And some past shit came up. Trauma. Some past trauma showed itself to me, basically. Somebody from my past brought up some abuse that I had kind of shut out. And then one of the reasons that my ex broke up with me was because of past trauma and his family telling him about how if he sees a fire in the distance, he shouldn't keep walking towards it. That fire, I guess, was me and my life. And and I'm taking Pauline Thought, and all of these things are co-escalating now. They're all coming together. And every year, all of this happened around Thanksgiving. Every year on my birthday, which is in December, I take that as my new year. And basically, I told myself at that point, like, you are not happy. You're not living the life that serves you. You're not living a life where you feel held, where you feel growth, any of that. You're not doing it. So this year, you're going to live for yourself. This year, you're really going to dig deep. You're going to figure out what it is that you want, what it is that you need, how you want your life to be, and fuck everything else. And so that was, I guess, the turning point. For that night of my birthday, I put in a Craigslist ad, because Craigslist was still really big back then, and was just like, I'm just gonna start this off with, well, first of all, I withdrew from Howard. Like, this, it was on the plan. This thing happened that night, but like the things I had planned to do, I withdrew from Howard because it was just too much to be trying to figure out and deal with this trauma and be in the architecture program, which is very, very, very hard. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do that. And I'm going to actually examine, like, what is it that I believe in spiritually, and really think about the relationships that I have right now and the relationships that I want to have. And a big part of my life was sex at the time, just like sensuality, not just sex, but like, I just feel like I'm a pretty sensual person. And so, and I was always shamed for it. I was like, I don't want to feel shame around this anymore. I just want to get what I want. So anyways, I put in this Craigslist ad, and I was just like, if there's somebody, I want somebody to eat my pussy and then leave. Or for me to come to your house, really, and for you to eat my pussy and then I leave. Just, that's all I want. Don't ask me for shit else. You ain't getting shit else. And I went with one of the first people who hit me up. He happened to live very close to me. And so he picked me up down the street because I wasn't about to let him know where I lived. Went to his house. He had a heater going. It was great. He had a little puppy. And he ate my pussy. And then I fell asleep. And then in the morning, he took me home. It was really great. And that proceeded like for months after that. And you know what? I learned his name, his actual name, probably like 3 or 4 months into this. And that's because he had this magnet or like something held onto his fridge where he got an award for journalism. Name on it. And that's when I learned what his name was. Because I didn't know. What's the point? Like he would hit me up, or I would hit him up once a week or so and be like, yo, you busy tonight? And if we were both like not busy, He would pick me up or I would take the bus to his house. We would do whatever. And then I would stay over there. He never came to my house, ever. Never asked to, no. And we would do whatever. And then I would leave that night or I would leave in the morning. He was a journalist. So, like, you know, he had he made his own schedule. So that was great. And he introduced me to kink and also non-monogamy because he was dating other folks at the time. And I pretty much at that time had just decided, like, after some self-reflection and stuff, I said, well, I guess that one, I'm never going to get married, but to be honest, never really wanted to be married because I see marriage as a business transaction, but that's neither here nor there. I was like, well, I just thought that I was supposed to be married, but I actually don't want to be married. And I don't want one partner, but since that's what everybody wants, I guess I'm just going to be single and I'm just going to have a whole bunch of friends. And at this, I had already established at this time that I was not straight. I knew I was not straight since high school, even though from high school to most of college, I would tell people I was straight and that girls were just for fun because what else could that be? It's not like there was anybody, it was not any like people getting married, like gay couples. And actually there was a lot of bisexual people that I knew in my community and my family. That bisexual women, I should say. But it was always like that, where it's like, oh, you know, they just have fun or whatever. Yeah. But like they real men are over here. So that's the attitude that I took to it at first. But then I was like, you know, fuck that. I'm going to live my life for me. So I already had established that I was bisexual. And so, yeah, so he introduced me to kink. He introduced me to threesomes. He introduced me to non-monogamy. Or the fact that that people could have ethical non-monogamy. That is, you know that the other person is fucking with other people. It's explicitly stated, not just that you know because you're like, I have an idea, or it's unspoken. Like, I know. We actually talk about it. And we discuss that there are other people and the you know, sexual health parameters that go around that. That's how that, I guess, world was opened to me originally.
So what did that education sound like? Because I know a lot of people think they know what kink is. They might have read the book or watched 50 Shades of Grey. Anyone in the community knows that ain't it. What does that look like for someone who has no idea or just knows what they see in the media?
Okay, so this is how I... First, this is how I learned about it. He brought some handcuffs. I liked them. He said, have you ever been on FetLife, which is like a kinky Facebook? I said, no. At the time, I did not join. But then whenever, fast forward, my ex-husband took me to a swinger party and they had some kink elements. I met a whole bunch of Black people that was doing kinky shit. And that's when I joined FetLife because I had them and friends. And FetLife is a cesspool. It's a hot fucking mess. However, they do have a lot of educational things on there if you just go for that. And so I learned, that's basically how I learned about kink, was forums and educational stuff on FetLife. And so for BDSM and kink, a lot of people think that is just, or think only of bondage, like what BDSM stands for, bondage, dominance, submissive, masochism, or sadism, masochism, whatever. But it's not just that. So it's not just a dominant submissive, where the dominant is over the submissive and tells them what to do and like spanks them or whatever. And it's not just fetishes where it's like, oh, this person is addicted to like rubber and popping balloons, or foot fetishes. Everybody know about foot fetishes and stuff like that. There's so many other aspects to kink. It really is just anything that is sensual, sexual, that's outside the realm of penis and vagina sex, penetrative sex. So there are things like edge play, which is knife play, where it's just like, it doesn't necessarily mean cutting. It could just mean rubbing a knife up against you, that type of thing. Fire play, wax play. And these are all called edge play because there's an element of danger to it, mm-hmm. where you could get hurt if the person doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Breath play, which is like choking and asphyxiation, all of that type of stuff. And then there's more sensual things, like sensation play, which is like feathers. I bet y'all didn't know that if you was rubbing feathers all over somebody's body, that is some kinky shit. Mm-hmm. Sensory deprivation, which is like blindfolds and, you know, silky cuffs. There's, of course, bondage, which is like cuffs. There's rope bondage, which can be either predicament, which is when you're tied up in very different types of situations, and it may be hurtful, it may not. And then there's like sensual, where it's more like soft ropes and it's just gliding across your skin. There's also, of course, like worship, like foot worship. There's boot worship. Booty. I like that. The booty worship. there's just so many aspects of kink out there that you can do. That's not just, oh, you're going to get paddled, or which is impact play, which is when somebody impacts you. So it's like floggers, paddles, whips, canes, all of that. There's way more to it than impact play and dominant submissive play. It's so much more. There's like pet play. That's one of my favorite things, where one person is a pet, whereas that's a pony or a puppy, or, you know, a pony, a puppy, a fox, because that's me, a cat, a kitten, whatever. So like there's so many different aspects to kink. So I encourage everybody to go look it up. I have a checklist where it lists a whole lot. Of kinky shit, and you can just like peruse through it and be like, I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this. BDSM checklist, I think, is just, if you search that, you can probably find that, and it's a list alphabetically of many, many things. It doesn't have everything on it because you're only limited by your imagination.
Yep,
that's it.
And it's one of the things I loved about learning what kink really was. Because the ability to be so creative based off of what you like, what you don't like, what you think you might like, mm-hmm. and maybe it's an entry point to be like, it's not that, but ooh, but this part of it, I like that. The way that sex is talked about traditionally, and how kink is, it can be, as you can experience with all of you,
mm-hmm.
or with just one part of you.
Yep.
And when it's done in a healthy manner, the way that consent is so key. As someone, mm-hmm. And I talked to the previous guest that we had, Dr. LaVon, about that. Like for me, as a sexual assault survivor, getting around people who do kink and do it in a responsible manner,
yes.
where we are, you know, establishing rules and consent and safe words and an after play.
Yep.
And even if I am in a submissive role, realizing just how powerful that role is,
yes.
even as a submissive, because I like being submissive, but I want to feel safe
mm-hmm.
in my submission. And knowing that a dom is going to, a good dom is going to make sure that I feel safe, and they find pleasure in yep. me feeling safe.
Yeah,
and wanting to give me that thing that I desire so much, even if that means I'm being a brat, and you know. Mm-hmm. But again, those parameters are discussed, and too yeah. often, even if you never do anything kink, like you might say on the light side of kink, I encourage everyone to learn about it, because the intentional communication that should be taking place in those spaces. Every relationship, no matter what your relationship looks like, would benefit from that.
Seriously. I would suggest that if you have access to it, or even if you just Google it or whatever, find a dungeon or a kink space, BDSM space that offers online classes, and take one of their negotiation classes. I promise you, it will change your life. It will change your life for negotiate, even if you never want to do anything kinky, just negotiating sex, because I feel like you said, we do not talk about sex so bluntly, and it really should be. It's a great activity, y'all. It's a wonderful activity, and you don't just go skydiving with somebody without talking about shit beforehand. So why would you just be like, okay, wear your papers, wear a condom, period, and that's all you talk about for sex?
Yeah.
And there's so much more that goes into it. There's so much more that you like, that you dislike, that you don't want to like ever happen to you, that you don't want to be said to you. And I feel like BDSM causes you to really think about those things, because you're stepping outside the box and you're thinking about what is the things in this situation that could happen that I would not like, that I would say red to, that I would say my safe word to, so I can communicate that beforehand. So I don't, you know, so that we don't do that. And the same should be taken with sex or any sensual activity of what are the things that I don't like? And I can communicate that beforehand, so we don't even have to talk about it afterwards. There are many boundaries that people do not know until it's been crossed.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that happens before the sex with somebody else or whatever, and you can communicate that so it doesn't happen again. And sometimes it happens during, and you need to know, or you need to have tools already there to talk about it.
Yeah,
because a lot of times when boundaries are crossed, that, and they were unspoken boundaries, there were ones that you didn't know that that were not communicated, it's not nobody's fault. Somebody got hurt, yes, but it's not nobody's fault. And you need to learn how to talk about that, how to negotiate through that. And yeah, King has taught me so much just about communication, about relationship communication that ain't got shit to do with sex.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing. Kink doesn't have to be penetration.
It does not. Bam. Not at all. Not a bit. Not a bit. I actually prefer.
Yeah.
A lot of the things I do, I prefer for there not to be sex or penetrative. First of all, in almost everything I do, I do not want penetrative sex, period, in my kink. Mm-hmm. And then for other shit that I do, it's like, we can have sex, but I don't like, yeah, again, we can have sex.
Yeah.
Or we can't have sex. Like, some things I don't want sex at all, and some things I'm like, we can have sex as long as it's not penetrative. So kink does not have to include sex at all.
Yeah. And that's why I knew this was important for us to discuss, because I think most church girls, or Black girls, even if you didn't grow up in church, you were kind of, the cultures align so much that we're told, you know, for historical reasons that we won't go into, that, you know, you're supposed to be virginal, be pure. And so you either get the girl who has turned into a woman who has believed that and done her best, or actually has, because I still hear of women, you know, Black women 40, 50, 60 years old who are virgins, and God bless them. And then there are those who didn't. You know, I was kind of sort of in the middle. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 23. But like you said, one, even if you're not having sex and that's your choice, whether it is that you are not interested at all, or you have decided that abstinence is something you want to do spiritually, negotiating in relationships is just important. But a lot of us who were having sex, once I did start having sex, I was not empowered.
Yeah.
Because one, I was doing it, but I was feeling a lot of shame because of the programming that I wasn't supposed to be doing it. Mm-hmm. So if I don't like something, I didn't feel like I could tell him, because I'm not even supposed to be doing this anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And if he hurt me, you know, and so I challenged my male friends. I'm like, you may not be a rapist in the sense that you're forcing a woman. I was like, but I promise you, unfortunately, because of how we were raised, there was a woman that you had sex with who didn't want to and felt coerced, and she did not know how to say no.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that that's your fault per se, although at this point we should be getting enthusiastic consent that a maybe is still a no. But if we don't have these conversations, that even if you are choosing abstinence, you still need to learn these things.
Yeah.
So when you get in a relationship, whether sex is at play or not, that you know how to approach and have these conversations. You know how to withdraw consent.
Mm-hmm.
And know that you can.
Yeah.
And know that they're not, you know, that we've had these conversations and they're not the kind of person that said, oh, I already started. And you can, you know, that's not, especially knowing that in some states, that's
yeah.
not illegal.
Yep. So, yeah. So it's really, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's just really insane. that is the fucking case, but it is. Yeah. And also, because there were instances where, so, all right. So people know about like stress responses or whatever. What is it? Fight or flight or freeze or fawn.
Yeah.
And I was a person that was fight or freeze. Mm-hmm. And so there were definitely situations, especially whenever I was swinging, which is a whole nother thing because the swinging culture is woof, woof. They like to be like, we are very feminist and mm-hmm. we are like super like consensual, whatever. But some of the unspoken things that they have are not very empowering because it is definitely like, it is definitely a touch first, let the person tell you no type of culture. And there were definitely times where I was coerced into sex or I was in the middle of having sex and didn't want to, even stated that I didn't want to have sex and still had sex because in the setting, one, most of the time I was one of the only Black people there, definitely mm-hmm. one of the only dark-skinned Black people there.
Yeah.
And two, it's like in public and I don't want to like fight nobody because I'd be fighting. I don't want to fight nobody in this public space where everybody naked. They're going to probably call the police on me and then what? But I distinctly remember this one time where I was bartending at a swinger event and I went upstairs because the two bathrooms downstairs were not open. I went upstairs and I came out the bathroom and there was this chick and she was fine as fuck. And she was basically like, oh, I want to have sex with you. And I was like, I'm working. Plus, I don't want to have sex tonight. And she just pushed me on the bed and started having sex with me. And in that moment, I was just like, I just froze up because one, sexual assault victim. Two, what do I look like telling you no when you fine as fuck? And three, mm-hmm. this is a swinger party.
And the idea is you're here to have sex.
And that's what you're doing. So I'm just like, all right, well, I'm just so. And also, I was one of the hosts. I was one of the organizers for this party. And so I was just like, well, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it. I enjoy sex. I'm just going to whatever, let it happen. Because I couldn't think of anything else to do. So I'm like, I just froze and it happened. And then I went back and bartended and I did not have time to process that until like weeks later. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something that it's just something that happens. And if you don't have the tools to negotiate, if you don't have the tools to like, say, this is how I get out of this situation. This is what consent is. And whatever, if you don't have those tools, then that's what you're going to do. You're going to have a stress response and it may not be the best one. Mm-hmm. You will regret it later.
Yeah, because in the moment, you're just trying to survive. And I relate to that because, you know, we know each other from our sorority. But, you know, my twice removed ex-boyfriend was the one who introduced me to swinging. And we went to a club and with the idea, oh, I want you to experience your fantasies. And, you know, I'm going in with, oh, well, we won't do this. We won't do that. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then we get there and he does everything that we said we wouldn't do. And now I feel bad because, oh, well, how can I withdraw that I don't want to do this thing? And I've already said yes. And so mm-hmm. we go to parties and most of the times I never even got to the point of feeling coercion from other people because I was already experiencing it from him.
Oh yeah. Same.
And, you know, from going to the parties to bringing people home to just being expected to participate in any sexual activity that he wanted for his own pleasure.
Yeah.
And all the religious programming, even though we're not supposed to have sex, all the other religious programming that I received actually aided in mm-hmm. keeping me there. Because who am I going to tell? That's not right. going to blame me for this. Well, you should. Who am I, you know? And then, you know, he's saying all the right things in other times. And how do I get out of this? And then there's the danger aspect because mm-hmm. United States Marine, you know, so it was a lot that there came a point in time where I was begging him, just go. I don't care what you do. Just go. Just go have fun. I don't care. I don't want to go. And feeling like if he did make me go, I was risking my life by not doing anything.
Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe if he just kind of gets bored of me because I'm not doing anything fun, then he won't want me to come anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm an alchemist, I can take from that and turn it into something. But at face value, like, no one should ever, mm-mm. ever go through that. And there were plenty of women that I encountered that the first time, you know, we would have couples come over and she was having a hard time getting it together. And I would grab her in a restroom and I was like, what's going on? And she's like, well, I don't really want to do this, but, you know, this is something he wants to do. And I was like, girl, go home. Yeah. I was like literally trying to save myself through them because I didn't know how to save myself. So I'm like, just don't start. It's hard. If you start, it's going to be harder. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get out. You know, but at the same time, I learned so much about myself. I can look back and be like, yeah, it wasn't that. That wasn't right. That wasn't it. But I'm also, you know, realizing, I do like these things though. And now because of therapy and healing and even expanding my spirituality, I have the tools to set the ground rules up front. And to walk away immediately, like you don't get no pass, and then it's easier to see the red flags early on. Like half the time, we're not even gonna get there because I already peeped game. Like the way you talk, the way that you, I get it. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so. You know, like you definitely have to be careful if you're listening to this and you are interested. Like she said, start with going to educational events
first. Yes. Yes.
Don't let someone be like, oh, yeah, come over here. We can do this and I'm going to teach you this way. No, 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 no.
No, no. Mm-mm. Don't do it. Co-sign everything that you just said, because as you know, because we was in it together, I went through the exact same thing with my ex. They was two peas in a fucking pod. Mm-hmm. I went through the exact same thing. And it's really funny because one of my current girlfriends is somebody that I warned off of my ex. Half of like, not half, I would say probably like one fourth, one eighth of the Black women that I associate with now have had dealings with my ex. And I was a person during that time that was like, don't do it, bitch. Stay away from him. Run. Yep. While I was with him. Yep. While I'm still with him, I'm telling them this. So yeah, it was definitely me saving myself through other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all of that.
Yeah, but it shows just how dangerous stigmatizing things and demonizing things are. Mm-hmm. I get that some people feel like that's what we have to do to keep people on the straight and narrow, but that's just not realistic. And that's not what we do over here. We're going to have these open, honest conversations. We're going to provide resources so you can continue educating yourself. And I want you to see yourselves and hear yourselves and women who are just like you, who have experienced, you know, some very similar things, were raised in very similar upbringings, if, you know, and understand that I think one of the reasons why I felt like I was open to that without knowing as much as I should have known before I got into it was because so much was held back from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that intuitively, I'm like, something doesn't feel right with why this is, you know, I'm being, you know, kind of herded away from these things without the education of why. And understanding and, you know, just the way that I operate, you can't just tell me no. Like, I need to understand why the no is a no so I can say that it's a no. And so, again, you know, we're here about education. And, you know, and this is something, you know, that you can do with your partner. You're married, mm-hmm. engaged, you have more than one partner. Maybe you want to do it one partner and you don't want to do it the other partner. That's all of that is okay.
100.
All of that is okay. You can do it by yourself. You can do it together. You can get some girlfriends. Maybe you and your girlfriends are just platonic friends, but you all are interested. Do it with each other and go find some groups. I'm going to include some resources in the show description to help you all get started, as well as I'll find the checklist for you if you want to do the checklist, just to see where you might stand, you know, as a newbie. Or even as someone who might think they know or have done some things. If you're on TikTok and you find yourself on KinkTok and stuff is like, wait, that is doing things to me. My pussy throbbing because he told me that I was a good girl. You know, you might be kinky. You might be kinky. So before we go, thank you again for an amazing conversation. Please let the people know how they can connect with you, find you. I know you're going to be doing some more events like the occult photo shoot that we did a while ago. You can go to our social media and find it. Let them know where they can connect with you.
Sure thing. So you can find me on my website, sunnydpod.com. That is sunnydpod.com. It has most of my links there. I also have a link tree. It's Linktree. It's linktr.ee/lilwildminx. LILWILDMINX. I have a Facebook group called Sunny D Pod. I have a Facebook page that is Sunny D. My Instagram is Sunny D Pod. And my Twitter is lilwildminx. Beware. If you're not here for the not safe for work things, because I'm also a sex worker, do not go to my Twitter because it is full of all of me plus T and Star Trek shit. That's pretty much it. It's just me naked, Star Trek T, and a little bit of polyamory thrown in there.
I love it. Be forewarned.
Yes, be forewarned. I'll send all them links over to you for you to share them. And also on my website soon. I won't be starting events until next year. Will be any links to any events that I'm putting on. I have photo shoots. There will be a book club happening soon that is both virtual and in person. I'm very excited for that. It's the Nerdy Flirty Book Club. Yeah. And I'm gonna have a little marketplace open up soon for cute, weird, scary, sexy shit. The type of stuff that make you be like, I have a scary boner right now. So yeah, check it out. Be stay tuned. There's many things happening.
Many things happening. Well, definitely, you know, I'll be there when I can, and hopefully we'll see some sexy church girls there as well. Open up your world and, you know, just birthing who you are meant to be and not living the life that others, religion, systems, society is telling you that you're supposed to be. We can be free. We are free.
We are free.
And the both of us are living examples of that. And so thanks for joining us this week. Stay
tuned.
Thank
you for having me.
Absolutely. Love you much.
Love you too.
Wasn't that an amazing
conversation. Isn't she fucking dope? I'm so glad that I know her. I'm so glad that our journeys have crossed paths again in this way. We both have been through so much and have decided to not give up on ourselves and to live the life that we have always deserved to live. So, want to connect with her? Her links are in the show description, along with a link to a checklist that I've added to our Google Drive that you can copy or download and fill out by yourself or with your partner or with your partners or with someone that you desire to start the kink relationship with. Or maybe you already are doing some kinky things and you want to see what else is out there or gauge what else you are interested in. That is all in the show description. Last but not least, I do have an announcement. So for you beautiful, loyal listeners, I appreciate you so much. We have recently reached another milestone, and thanks to you, we have reached 3,500 downloads since the inception of this podcast. So cheers to you all. I thank you so much. You don't know how much it encourages me to know that you are listening, you are supporting, you are DMing me, you are doing all the things, reaching out to me with your suggestions or your comments, your questions. And as a thank you, and because I want to be even more connected with you all, I have officially opened up our private community called the Radiant Session Society. It is a Facebook group that you join. The list of those who are in it will be hidden, so your privacy will be protected in that way. The link to join is in the description as well. But if you DM me on Instagram or Facebook, I will also send it to you that way, or email it to me. Email me the request and I will also send you a link that way. So I hope to see you in there. We're going to be having so much fun and continuing these conversations in a much more intimate and much more transparent way. So hope to see you on the other side and see you next week. So we're going to start a series on relationships. We got the holidays coming up, so let's talk about some relationships in November. All right, and don't forget, be as radiant as the sun. Bye, besos.